All right. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And, we're very happy to be, you're just listening to Baraka, Preach by Baraka, who's a quite a prominent First Nations hip hop artist. And now we're here. I'm just now joined by one of our co-presenters who arrived here a bit late, but now we're now very happy to be joined today by Zach Schofield, who is one of the main climate activists who is involved in organising the upcoming rising tide kind of blockade. So good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Jacob.
Sorry, I just forgot to press there was a button I forgot to press. All right. Hey, Jordan, do you want to ask the first question?
Yeah, good morning, by the way, listeners. I've just come in a little bit late, just in time to interview our guest here. Hi, Zach. So firstly, we'd just like to ask, you know, because the right to protest is having a moment, and you've been doing speaking events on Chris Minns' outrageous comments. Can you tell listeners how important it is to have this right to protest, you know, a right that is being challenged and trying to be taken away? Can you tell listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely, Jordan. So, look, here in New South Wales, our Premier Chris Minns, in response to or provoking a response from Palestine Action Group in Sydney ahead of the October 6th rally on Sunday, made some frankly disgraceful comments about in this Form 1 system that we have in New South Wales, where protesters submit a notice of intention to the police to let them know what the plan is for, you know, mass rallies and protests, made the suggestion that police should disallow protests based on the cost of policing them, or alternatively that the user pays scheme, where protesters and organisers actually have to pay for the policing of the protests, which is, you know, plainly ridiculous on a number of counts. Obviously, the protests are over-policed as it is anyway, and that's a very easy way to cut costs, is just stop bringing riot police to, you know, peaceful, family-friendly events. But more than that, you know, protesting is a foundational right of democracy. You know, the union movement, the suffragette movement, civil rights movement, and the environmental, queer, anti-war, you know, all of these disruptive protest movements have actually made the democracy such as it is that we have today. So to say that we should cancel those rights based on cost, I mean, you know, if you extend that argument, if an election is too expensive based on Chris Minns's ideas, does that mean that we should just not do it? Or, you know, maybe we should distribute less ballots next year? It's just ridiculous. And the right to protest is under this sort of political, rhetorical attack, but thankfully there are still some constitutional protections, you know, the implied right to political communication, which do protect protest. And I'm quite hopeful that a combination of contests in the courts, testing these claims, you know, in court, and then also just defending the right to protest by going out and protesting, making it really, really clear that the community will not be cowed by these threats, is the best way to go about it, right? And across history, we've just seen that the right to protest has been under attack when governments are not fulfilling the will of the people. It's much, you know, they'd rather make political problems policing problems. They'd rather not do their job and just, you know, shunt it off to the police and let them try and mop us up. But it doesn't work like that when people come together and take a stand. So that's what Palestine Action Group did in Sydney, much to their credit. And in the People's Blockade this November in Newcastle, it's what we'll be doing as well.
Yeah, so I want to kind of ask you about the kind of rising tide blockade, but actually I want to kind of talk a bit about the political importance, I guess, of this blockade, because, I mean, we've all been kind of watching the kind of news, and obviously we're seeing the terrible impact of the floods in the United States. But of course, it's also a bit of a thing that, you know, disproportionately, you know, when these things happen in a global north country, they tend to get obviously much more kind of awareness, etc. We are obviously aware as climate activists that these extreme weather events are disproportionately hitting, you know, the poorest kind of countries. But of course, probably a big difference is, you know, when these things are happening in the kind of global north, you know, we have this kind of right wing that's sort of denying the kind of links between the extreme events of the climate, but also even amongst so-called governments that accept the science of climate change, like our Labor government, for example, our Labor government is still approving coal mines. So yeah, I guess I want to kind of hear your thoughts on the importance of attending this rising tide blockade, especially in terms of building the climate movement, because I think, you know, we need to be, yeah, I think there's a real importance that we need to be out on the streets for the climate, because the governments clearly are not taking the action that is required.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there's a number of reasons why the Labor government isn't taking the action required. You know, I'm sure your listeners have some ideas themselves. But it is true to say that the mining industry, particularly, you know, the fossil fuel industries in Australia, carry a lot of weight. And that's political, it's economic, but there's you know, some stories that get told, that have been told for generations about, you know, how coal and gas is good for Australia, you know, jobs. And at the end of the day, in some communities, you know, a significant minority or in some communities, a majority of jobs are directly connected to the fossil fuel industry. That a tiny percentage across Australia, but for some communities, you know, like in the Upper Hunter, that is the case. And so there are stories that carry weight around the importance of the industry. It's our job to tell that counter narrative, not just on, you know, the moral issue of preventing climate change. I think it is, you know, one of the most significant moral issues of you know, our time, but also tell the story about how the coal and gas corporations are not actually good for Australians. And in fact, you know, they pay some of the lowest rates of tax out of any industry in this country, despite the fact that we are the world's second largest fossil fuel exporter. Countries with far less, you know, in terms of quantity, exports than us, you know, many, many, many more times in tax than us. Norway is an oil-exporting nation, taxes its oil exports at 78%, and that money goes into a sovereign wealth fund, you know, that is worth now over $2 trillion Australian dollars. And they basically fund their social programs off the interest of that fund. Whereas in New South Wales, the coal royalties average about 8 to 12%. Which is further reduced through tax concessions and other incentives. And, you know, even if it wasn't further reduced, it's far, far less than what everyday Australians pay on their income tax. You know, it's really quite disgraceful. For the gas industry, they pay even less, sometimes quite close to 0% tax. And, you know, it's about telling this narrative that actually these corporations are basically stealing from the taxpayer. They're getting a free ride, all for private profit. It doesn't go back into the community. You know, and I respect the hell out of workers and the labour that it takes to make these corporations run, but we shouldn't be grateful for, you know, wages or salaries that are paid to workers for labour. You know, if corporations say, well, we give you jobs, well, sure, you know, you may have jobs there, but it's the workers who actually do the work to make the money. So don't expect us to be grateful for that, particularly when, you know, at least in the Hunter, we've seen Tony Plibersek, the Environment Minister, approve three massive new coal expansions to the tune of 1.5 billion tonnes of carbon emissions now going to be released if these projects continue to go ahead. All for the sake of, you know, as she's reporting it, 1,800 jobs. Now, there are no jobs in coal mines that don't exist. Those jobs don't exist themselves either. So that's a bit of a red herring. But if we are talking about potential employment, the renewable energy industry over the next 10 years is projected to create 34,000 jobs in the Hunter. So if we are going to go down that route and talk about, you know, potential employment, then there are industries that the government should be subsidising, that should be, you know, they should be supporting, that are the future and don't lead anywhere near as much to the catastrophic climate impact that we're seeing around the world. So telling that story about how these coal and gas corporations are actually ripping us all off, you know, in the first place, is really, really important part of, you know, bringing people along with us and actually building the power to take these corporations on. And so that's part of what we're going to be doing at the People's Blockade. I'm really proud to say that one of our core demands is actually an imposition of a 78% now tax matching Norway on fossil fuel exports to fund transition and also to fund a climate loss and damage fund, you know, to pay for the terrible damage that we and our Pacific neighbours are going to be experiencing over the next decade. So that's extremely exciting to me. And if anyone is interested in that conversation, I encourage you to check out our website. We've got a webinar coming up with Richard Dennis from the Australia Institute, Roberta Ryans from the Institute for Regional Futures about this transition.
Yeah, thank you so much. Absolutely, you know, the conduct of these rapacious corporations is absolutely, you know, grotesque and so devastating to, you know, not just, you know, climate justice here and around the world, but a variety of other, you know, issues, even just relating to how, you know, taxpayers not having any say in where their money goes. So just as we are sort of coming to the conclusion of our time, I'm just wondering if you can sort of promote the Rising Tide Blockade that's coming up. Can you tell listeners when, where, how, and why they should get there? Just set the scene a little bit, maybe tell listeners what it might look like.
For sure. So, look, last year in November, we as Rising Tide blocked the world's largest coal port, which is Newcastle Coal Port, my hometown, for 32 hours, stopping over 500,000 tonnes of coal from being exported during that time. We had 3,000 people on the beach over a four-day period. And at the end of the day, we stayed longer than our notice of intention indicated that we would. 109 people, including myself, were arrested, and we broke into international media off the back of that action. That was really inspiring to be part of, and this year we're escalating to a much, much bigger event. So this November, from the 19th to the 28th, a 10-day period, we will be mobilising for climate and transition in Newcastle and Canberra. Beginning on Tuesday the 19th in Newcastle, we have 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, of activist workshops and trainings. We've got an amazing transition forum happening on Wednesday night. We've got film screenings, affinity group trainings, non-violent direct action trainings. You know, we're building the movement, building the infrastructure and the skills of the movement at a frontline blockade camp in Newcastle. And then over Friday the 22nd to Sunday the 24th, we will be out on the water with our kayaks, with pontoons, small craft, all sorts of boats, for 50 hours to, again, block the world's largest coal port for as long as we have the critical mass to do so. And that's going to be a really, really empowering event. It was amazing to be on the water last year. And, you know, look, we have submitted a Form 1 for this program. It's being assessed now. We may face a Supreme Court challenge from the New South Wales Police, or we may not. But if it does go ahead, those 50 hours, you can be out on the water without facing any legal repercussions. And that's the point of the protest, right, is to make it an accessible, family-friendly, you know, just come and show up and be part of the movement sort of event. Of course, last year, after the approved time, people did stay out on the water longer to make the point. And After our protest in Newcastle concludes, we pack up on the Monday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the next week, from the 26th to the 28th, we'll be going to Canberra to take the message directly to Parliament on the final sitting days of Parliament for 2024. We will have pulled off an unprecedented climate mobilisation, unprecedentedly disruptive at a key industrial port, with a real cross-section of the community, and we'll be taking that message directly to Parliament to say, oi, get your shit together, because the tide is rising.
Yeah, thanks, Zach. And I was in attendance at last year's blockade, and can say it was a very invigorating couple of days being there, and fantastic to see the climate, you know, movement doing something so big. So before we let you go, just wondering, do you have any final words you would like to leave our listeners with?
For sure. So, look, get involved. It's always the call to action. But I want to say something really specific about movement building, right? Rising Tide, we take a movement ecosystem sort of lens. You know, we are not the only group that is doing important things, and there are many, many ways to contribute to building pressure against the fossil fuel industry, putting that pressure back on government. So get involved with whatever group is operative in your area that, you know, that you feel you can get involved with. But then bring them to the people's blockade, right? Because we're all stronger together. And we, you know, I desperately hope to see banners of other groups and other organisations flying high at the people's blockade, because it is meant to be a coming together of civil society, you know, a coming together of all sorts of different people for this really, really critical moment in history. And as we build that movement, as we build the skills, we're building the communities that we're going to face the next decades with. And, you know, whether you think the climate crisis is a lost cause, or the police state is coming, or whatever you think about what bad is going to happen over the next couple of decades, it's the people that you organise with that have an experience of standing up and making stuff happen in opposition that you want to be going into those next decades with. It's what keeps me going, and I really hope to see you all there.
Thank you so much for being with us on Green Left Radio, 3CR, 855 AM on your dial. We'll talk to you next time.